I'm not throwing in the towel on this Buck team.
Buccaneers fans, here he is, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the great Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. He's Tampa Bay's only Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. More important, he is a JoeBucksFan.com columnist. That is Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan is here. We got a game on Sunday, Ira. We're fired up about it. Very interesting point in the season. We've got some intriguing things to talk about today, to say the least. And it's all presented by Bill Curry Ford. 24/7, you can visit BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping and see all of their Black Friday deals, which are all out there. Too many to talk about. Check them out right now, BillCurryFord.com. Curry is the family name since 1958. That's not as old as Ira, but you know they're up there. Family owned right here in Tampa for so many years. GM Sean Sullivan, he'll help you personally if you want that personal touch from the big boss. He'll also give you $500 to order a new vehicle through their concierge service, which makes it so easy, no deposit. Just get all the information at BillCurryFord.com. The Ira Kaufman discount over and above everything is always in effect. You can mention that. Ira, let me tell you this. Sean mentioned on his Best in Class podcast that a man came in to Bill Curry Ford and said, you know, I don't need a discount, Sean. I'm buying this truck, but I just want to talk football with you for 20 minutes. And Sean's like, absolutely. And he's like, I love hearing Ira and I love you guys. And he bought a truck. And then Sean said his sister came in a week later and bought a vehicle. So how about that?
That is absolutely fantastic. I love it. And by the way, I might add this about our favorite car dealer. Sometimes I go down Gun Highway, I make a left on Van Dyke, and then I hook into Dale Mabry if I'm going to One Buck Place. And the other day, on the right side, I happened to notice the street sign, Curry Ford Drive. Curry Ford Drive. I couldn't believe it. I went to the butts. On my way home, I stopped off at the dealership. Sean wasn't there, but I talked to Jeff, and I mentioned it to him, and he goes, yeah, they helped build that whole development over there. So they gave him the name Curry Ford Drive. Can you imagine, Steve? That's an example of how invested in this area and this community Bill Curry Ford is. I think it's a tremendous tribute.
It's a fantastic tribute. Look, I've been trying to get Hines Avenue renamed Ira Kaufman Way, but it's not going too well. But I was thinking maybe we could get a dead end in Newport Richey named after you, Ira.
I think there's a latrine behind the 7-Eleven, Lee. I got a shot at that, maybe.
Sage, a Big Storm Beer is Florida's best craft beer. Ybor City, you know, you got to spend your weekend happy hours there. Fantastic location. Centro Ybor upstairs, brand new, fun times. Sage has been out there and all kinds of good stuff going on at Big Storm Ybor City. Follow them on social media. And each location, each tap room has its own social media. A lot of good events and activities going on at the tap rooms, much more than just incredible food and Florida's best craft beer. Big Storm Orlando, Big Storm Cape Coral, and Big Storm Clearwater, 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road, the huge flagship location, and Big Storm in Odessa off State Road 54. BigStormBrewery.com to see all the beers, and Big Storm Distillery, you can buy from them. They'll ship it right out to you for the holidays. Great stuff there. Lee's seems to be a Coyote Ugly bourbon fan. They've got that fantastic bourbon out there, BigStormBrewery.com. And Sage of Florida's Elite Restoration. You know, it's not storm season, but disasters happen all the time. Flood, fire, mold. Call them as soon as you have a problem. We'll talk more about them later. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. All right, Ira, look, I'm glad you've been driving around looking at streets. But we got football to talk about. Lee is in California, in Northern California there. Lee, okay?
Yeah, in San Jose, California. Ira, this is right up your alley. The Uber drove right past the Zoom headquarters.
Wow, how about that? Now, Lee, I know you're not above taking Uber. Lee, I don't know how much it would cost to go up to San Francisco, but I could see you going up to Chinatown, Lee, having a little dim sum. And leaving a nice tip for the waitress. I could see it, Lee.
Well, first off, number one, if I can't pronounce it, I'm probably not going to eat it. No, I have one reason I came out here early. I was hoping to take a train up to San Francisco, go see Alcatraz. I've seen the Golden Gate. I've seen Alcatraz from a distance. But 2 years in a row, looks like it's going to rain tomorrow. So there goes that idea. Maybe I just might want to give up on Alcatraz.
We've been watching a lot of video about what's going on in San Francisco. That could be a turnoff to you, too. Could be.
No, they clean the place up for the commies. That's the time to go. Don't worry about stepping in any human waste.
Unbelievable.
All right, Sage Luck. Speaking of human waste, let's talk about the Buccaneers running game for a second. Now, look, interesting stuff, Ira. The Buccaneers apparently put in a waiver claim earlier this week on Michael Carter, who was cut by the Jets. So Carter was sort of completely off the map this year once they got Dalvin Cook. Apparently he pouted a little bit, just affected him. Last year, he didn't have as good a year as he did as a standout rookie in 2021. Part of that's because they had drafted Breece Hall, who was better than him, and it's just how it worked out. He seemed like a good running back who got caught in the wash. Now, the Bucs didn't trade for a running back. The trade deadline was on Halloween, but here they are throwing in a waiver claim for Michael Carter. Lee's got strong opinions. I have some different opinions, some strong opinions. What's your thought on the Bucs actually making that move?
Well, I say bravo, Jason Light. Bravo. You got off your chair and you made a phone call. Even if it didn't pan out, I applaud the effort. Lee, some people are listening to our podcast because we've been talking about this since the season began. You don't change the running backs and the line's an average blocking line for the run. What can you expect, Lee? What can you expect? I'm looking at Rashad White. For his career, he's averaging 3.5 yards, almost two full, a year and a half. It's not getting any better. They made the move for Carter. Didn't work out. At least they got off their lethargy. I can't knock them for that. And maybe that's not the last claim they put in.
I'm pretty much in lockstep with you, Ira. The fact that they attempted to upgrade, it's tough to upgrade after the trade deadline. I will quote your good friend, Chris Mad Dog Russo. The fact that they went after a Jets reject, that's all you need to know. And here's why I'm happy about this. I'm not happy that they didn't get him. It's depressed, but what are you going to do? It's not like the Bucs didn't try. The fact that they tried, the fact that they attempted, was sort of like an admittance. Finally, an admittance that, yes, we have a problem. We have a problem at running back. Almost like someone from the Bucs went to a Running Backs Anonymous meeting, and someone stood up, raised a hand, my name is insert name. I have a running back problem.
Steve, it should have been a total consensus. And I mean from the O-line coach to the running back coach to Canales to Bowles and maybe a Glazer or two. Steve, the vote should have been 7-0. Go out and try to get somebody because it hasn't worked in a year and a half. I know, I always think Gronkowski's a back to his absence, but it doesn't explain everything. White doesn't make anybody miss in the backfield. As opposed to what he does when he catches the ball in space, Steve, it's a totally different story. So I'm with Lee. Play to the guy's strengths. As long as you stick him with Rashad White as your primary back, don't give him any carries and throw him the ball.
As far as the blocking, you're not wrong on Gronkowski. I'm sure they had something to do with it, although Canales likes to run between the tackles. That may not be the Bucs' strength. But I don't think you're wrong on Gronkowski, but I'm going to take that a next step further. Chris Godwin's one of the best blocking receivers in the game.
Yeah.
And the left, which had him playing at slot. Canales has him playing outside. Is that a factor?
I'm glad you mentioned it, Lee. I'm not sure I like the way Godwin's being used right now. And Steve, you can slap me around all you want. I thought he was very effective in the slot. Very effective. One of the things I asked this week when I went out to one buck, I asked Godwin himself. I asked Mayfield. You played 9 games, this guy's got 1 touchdown? I mean, what's going on here? Who's this guy? One of these young Chiefs guys that can't catch the ball? This is Chris Godwin. 1 touchdown? Everybody's got their own answer. Well, he's got to throw at what they give you. They're covering Godwin. I don't want to hear it, Lee. I don't want to hear it. They got to find a way to get this guy open in the red zone. I think they should go back to the way it was. Godwin working inside. Take advantage of his blocking acumen. And I think he's more effective there. I think it was a move that didn't have to be made.
Not just the blocking acumen, but his physicality inside.
He's not a burner on the outside. He's never going to be a burner. He's not.
I mean, he was a good receiver when Arians showed up. Arians moved him into inside as a slot, and he blew up.
Steve, what are we going to do? End the season and Chris Godwin's got 2 touchdowns? I mean, is that acceptable?
All right, Sage, look, I don't. My head's going to explode over here. I don't even know what to do. All right, look, before I'm not even going to touch the Godwin thing. I'll come back to it. This Michael Carter thing, Ira, this is an important situation here that we need to explore. Number one, if they put in a waiver claim for him, why the hell didn't they trade for him? If you know that, I mean, unless something happened in New York and there's no knowledge that it did, why didn't they just trade for the guy? I mean, you would think he could have been had for a 7th round pick. So that's my first question.
I guess they didn't want to give up an asset and they thought they could get him. They didn't think they'd get beat out on the waiver wire. They didn't anticipate that.
So they screwed up is what you're saying?
No, I mean, I'm not sure they're willing to give up a draft pick for Michael Carter. I mean, he's a long shot, but at least they tried to get him. But I understand your point, Steve. It wouldn't have taken much to get him. It wouldn't.
All right, so question two is, what do you think they thought that Carter was going to accomplish here? Did you think it was just a simple case of, hey, look, he's got another year on his contract. Keyshawn Vaughn is in his last year. This guy's better than Keyshawn, who's proven that he doesn't have it. He was inactive last week. This guy's better. That's it. Yeah, or they didn't like Sean Tucker anymore because you know they weren't going to keep 5 running backs. And Rashad White obviously is their top dog. And they're not going to throw away Chase Edmonds just yet.
Well, Carter's young, Steve. He's young. You throw him in the mix. You give him 6 carries. You give him 7 carries. Don't mention Keyshawn Vaughn anymore on this podcast, Steve. Don't mention it. Unless you're mentioning it, he was just released by the Bucs. He's done. Probably won't get another carry this season. He has done nothing to merit another carry this season for his Buck career. Lee, no chance he's coming back in 2024. Not a chance in the world. Why not bring in Carter, Lee? I mean, you got nothing to lose. See what he's got. He's young. And, you know, right place, right time. Sometimes it works out. So I think that was the thinking. I don't think they thought he was going to replace Rashad White and get the bulk of the snaps. That wasn't going to happen because White's too valuable as a target out of the backfield. And I don't think they went to him often enough last week, Lee. I think he only got 2 targets. That's not nearly enough.
When Steve's done, I got a follow-up question for you, Ira, about Michael Carter. I don't know if Steve's finished or not.
I'll get off Michael Carter. He's not here. He did go to the Cardinals. The Washington put in the other waiver claim was the report. So it was the Bucs, Washington, and the Cardinals, who everybody says they're tanking, and then they go out and had that great victory. It was a real fun game. Come back against the Falcons. Thank you, Cardinals, for doing that for us Bucs fans. But I just want to say, Chris Godwin, Ira, you know, I don't know. I mean, the guy's on pace to catch like 85 balls this season. They are using him. He's still, I mean, did you expect him to catch 105? I guess you could say that. The red zone stuff I don't get, but he's still blocking a little bit, and I have to say, Lee's a production guy. The blocking from Godwin, you know, really helped a lot during the legendary years here, 2020 and 2021, but it didn't help last year when the running game was the worst in the league. So I kind of like the way they're using him. They just need to use him more, and I think he is a deep threat that they're just not throwing to.
Steve, I'm certainly not talking about how many balls he's catching. You know, last year was phenomenal. That's not my beef. My beef is, you know, whether you want to call him an elite receiver, he's a frontline receiver. There are teams in this league that he would be the number one guy. Lee, he's not here. I think everybody would admit that Mike Evans draws the most attention. And having said that, I'd like him to visit the end zone more than once, Lee. That's my knock. In the red zone, I think they got to be looking for Godwin a little bit. He can make the tough catch, Lee. You're not going to give him a fade like Mike Evans. But I'd like to see some throws come his way in the red zone. This team's got to score more touchdowns. Lee, even last week they scored 20 points. You know, that's not a huge amount. I want more touchdowns out of Godwin. And I'm not necessarily blaming Godwin. I think sometimes they forget about him when they get to the red zone. And to me, he's dangerous down there. He knows how to get open. And he can make a contested catch. So my beef is the 1 touchdown. 9 games, not nearly good enough.
Here's my last Michael Carter point, Iron. This is sort of what Steve kind of was asking. Steve asked if they were interested in Michael Carter, if they're interested enough to put in a waiver claim, why didn't they trade for him? They could have got him dirt cheap. Could it have been, you know, you were talking about consensus a little earlier.
Yeah.
Could it have been that Canales and Bowles both told Light, no, we'll be fine. We'll be okay. We'll get this kickstarted. We'll turn the corner. And the last couple games, like, Jason, we're not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, the holdup on a potential draft pick to acquire Carter, the holdup might have come on from Light's direction. After all, he's the guy that drafted White. Todd Bowles didn't draft Rashad White. Jason Light did. And I don't think Light has given up on White carrying the football, even though you and I haven't seen anything that would give him confidence. I'm looking at Michael Carter right now. Lee, his rookie year, he averaged 4.3 yards, a carry. Not bad. And he caught 36 balls. So, you know, he's not terrible catching balls either. They might regret not making a deal for Carter. And I think sharing the load, carrying the ball, I don't think that's a bad idea. Vaughn's out of the picture. Who knows what Tucker's going to bring, or Edmonds. I think it could have helped. If they missed the playoffs by a game, they might go back and kind of regret that.
How deep is Tucker in Todd Bowles' doghouse?
Oh, boy. He's a little bit ahead of Vaughn, if that says anything.
Wait a minute. I thought Todd Bowles doesn't get involved in the offense.
They just closed the book on Vaughn, and nobody's got any confidence in him. I'm still waiting for Rashad to break out. Steve, here's my stat of the day. 132 carries for Mr. White this season. Long gain, 16 yards. He doesn't have a 20-yard run. I'm not sure he had one last year. Steve, at some point, you know, you got to pick up some chunks of yards. 3.5 yards a carry isn't so terrible if once in a while you break off for 30. He doesn't. So, you know, I think Michael Carter would have been a nice fit. He had a 55-yard run as a rookie for the Jets. And like Steve said, he got eclipsed by Breece Hall. There's no shame in that. Breece Hall, when healthy, is a hell of a backup.
Now, I get the Rashad White hype as a pass catcher. You know, I had brought up weeks ago that he's on pace for the NFL record, catching the highest percentage of targets. He's still on that pace. He had the streak of catching, 20 in a row, thrown his way. But I got to say, Ira, and I hate to be the guy to just pee all over a great run and or just throw cold water on it, but I still want to see more from the guy. If you go back and look at the screen for the touchdown, which was a beautiful thing, a huge play, game changer, wonderful. Ira wrote a whole column about screens. He's in love with the screen pass.
I am.
But Ira, you look at that pass, it's beautifully blocked. Rashad White is untouched, basically running in a straight line to the end zone. I can't go crazy about Rashad White for that specific play. It was perfectly designed, perfectly executed, but I'm not going to say that this was just some dynamic play by Rashad White. So I'm just going to stop there.
You will acknowledge, though, that on other receptions by White, specifically this season, he has done a good job of dodging the first would-be tackler.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Yeah, he's been. And you're right. Nobody touched him on that screen pass. I give credit for the execution, the blocking, and Mayfield did a nice job luring in the pass rushers. But you're right, White untouched. And by the way, you're speaking of that catch percentage you were talking about, Steve. I have the numbers up to date. 95 targets for his career, 95, 85 catches. Steve, that's 89.5%. I mean, that's off the charts.
Wanted to run this past you guys. Tristan Wirfs was very coy this week when he did the Buccaneers radio network. He was on with Ali Marpet. They were talking all this high-level offensive line stuff, and he was asked about his weight, and he wouldn't reveal it. And he shied away from it with Pat McAfee when he was on the Pat McAfee show this week. And Dan Pompey of The Athletic writes a whole feature about Wirfs and explains that he sort of transformed his body with the help of the Bucks this offseason, and he lost body fat, dropped to 1% in body fat, but got stronger, and now he weighs 360 pounds. So the only thing I don't understand, Ira, is how do you have a 365-pound consensus superstar, Hall of Fame track left tackle, and you just can't run the ball for 4 yards behind him? I don't understand that. You were around when Paul Gruber was here and other great players. Can any of you guys explain that to me? Because even without a great tight end. Shouldn't it be possible, maybe even with a fullback?
You ask a decent question, Steve. They don't run behind Wirfs very often. They don't, especially outside Wirfs' left side very often. They don't. Boy, when I looked at some of the great left tackles, the Walter Joneses of the world, they ran, you know, right behind that guy, right behind him. Go stop it. And these guys were so good. I think Wirfs is in that class. Now, is he as good a run blocker as a pass protector? Lee, he's not. But that's no shame, because I think he's the best pass protector in football. I don't know what the PFF tribe has to say about it, nor do I care. I watch him every week, Lee. So do you. He manhandles these guys. Now, we're talking about him as a run blocker. Maybe he's not that good a run blocker because they don't run behind him very often. Lee, maybe if they did it more often, he'd fine-tune his game. The guy's an incredible athlete. I don't care if he weighs 375. The guy moves like he weighs about 290. They are, I wouldn't say fortunate, because they drafted him. They did draft him. But for those that are trumpeting the Bucs scouting department, let's remember one thing, Mr. DeKemper. He was the fourth offensive tackle off the board that year, and somebody could have went up there and grabbed Wirfs. A lot of teams before the Bucs got their mitts on him. So he fell to them, and to his credit, Light moved up, I think, one spot and grabbed him. But he was not the first tackle taken off the board. But boy, is he the best one, Lee. Why don't they run more behind Wirfs, Lee? It's an enduring mystery.
Well, it is a mystery. And real quick, Kai, isn't one of the many critiques that Jets fans have against Joe Douglas is that they picked Becton over Wirfs?
Well, it should be. It should be, Lee. And the Giants did the same thing.
I remember when Wirfs was a rookie, and, you know, it was Zoom media those days. The virus kept us from we were banned from one Buck Palace.
Right.
It was late in the season, and somebody asked Arians about how Wirfs was coming along. And Arians broke out into the cat ate the parrot smirk on his face, and he said, "All I know is when we run to the right side, we get a lot of push." So how's it gone from they got push when they ran behind Wirfs to now all of a sudden he's supposedly a subpar run blocker and they're scared to run behind him?
Steve, when the Ravens had Jonathan Ogden, Hall of Famer, you know, they ran the hell out of the ball off left tackle. You know, when Walter Jones was there in Seattle, Sean Alexander scored about 25 touchdowns, maybe even more that season. And he's running behind, and they also had Hutchinson at left guard. I mean, that's a fantastic left side. They ran left, and dared you to stop them. I'd like to see a little bit more of that in Tampa.
One thing we want to see more of in Tampa is people driving Bill Curry Ford vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Check out the Black Friday specials today at Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. You know, the Bucs got their asses kicked last year in San Francisco, blown out, pushed around, ugly, you know, just messy stuff. Different team, different quarterback, different year. But what I keep seeing all over the place is everybody expects the Bucs to get blown out. And I sort of have a problem with that because, no, I don't expect the Bucs to win, but why should I expect them to get their asses completely kicked if they're a decent defense? And maybe you can talk about that, your perspective, and then, you know, see what Lee thinks, and we'll get into our picks.
Public opinion going into this game. What the Niners did to Jacksonville on the road last week. The Jaguars were hot, Lee. They were playing good ball, and they were dismantled by a team with a three-game losing streak who's getting healthy in the Niners. That's scary enough. After a bye week, I think they did a lot of soul searching. That team should not be in the three-game losing streak. They're too talented. And they took out their wrath and frustration on the Jaguars, who, Lee, let's face it, I think by any standard, the Jags are better than the Bucs, and so are the Dolphins, by the way, in the state rivalries. They made Trevor Lawrence look awful. They sacked him five times. They picked him off twice. Travis Etienne did nothing. It was a scary performance, Lee. Scary. And I'm not sure the Niners are going to lose another game the rest of the way. So, you know, had the Niners struggled at Jacksonville, even if they won the game, I don't think there would be this clarion call for a 49er rout on Sunday. But, Lee, that was a very scary performance by San Francisco.
Well, the reason why I think people believe this is going to be a rout for the 49ers, it's an ugly-looking matchup. On paper, it's a very ugly matchup, which brings me to the next question. Ira and Steve, this is more for Steve, but I want your take on this, Ira, because it got my antenna up. I'm out there Thursday. I thought Dave Canales was very forthcoming about something. Actually, too forthcoming, which raised my antenna. Dave Canales said, if you think you're going to drop back and beat the 49ers, good luck. So basically what he was saying is, we have the worst rushing team in the league, and we're going to pound the ball on them. And I got to thinking, wait a minute. Why would he come out and basically admit what he plans to do against them? That's a little fishy to me. Steve, did you get the same impression? That's a little too forthcoming from Canales, as in he's pumping out fake news to maybe throw off the Niners?
Steve?
Ira, go ahead. You take it.
I'm not sure that many wanted to ground and pound, but I think what it meant was, you know, at least, you know, run the ball 20, 25 times, even if you get 65 yards. And I think he's right. Mayfield throwing 45 balls in this game against this team. I know their sack totally isn't impressive, but they are third in the league in hits, quarterback hits. And they're gonna rough up Mayfield at certain points in the game. So, Lee, I'm not thinking Canales says it's going to be run heavy, but I don't think he's ready to abandon the run game in this particular matchup against this particular defense. I'm not sure that he thinks the offensive line could hold up against that deep Niner front. Steve, you get the impression that that they're going to be run heavy in this game?
Well, I think Canales, it smelled like he had just watched the film and was like, man, there are plays for us, but we can't throw the ball a ton. They lead the league in picks, and they've got a great pass defense when they're healthy, and they're healthier now than they've been. So I don't know why he went there or what he was talking about, but ultimately, you know, Minnesota beat them on that Monday night game that was very entertaining through the air. That's how they beat them. And
yes,
the Bucs certainly have talent. I don't think the Bucs have a chance running the football, so that's why it seemed awfully odd. It was like, Dave, hey, that's the only way you can beat them because you're the Buccaneers.
Maybe the idea is to, when you throw the ball, throw it to White. Give him 10 targets and let him catch 8 passes and see what happens.
I do know the 49ers front seven. I think it's fair to say they're formidable.
Yeah.
That might be an understatement. I don't know how the Bucs are supposed to run for 50 yards on them. Forget 65 or 70. I've always been of the mind, you only get X amount of snaps a game. Why waste them? And to me, pounding just to pound with that rushing attack, which is terrible, against that run defense, which is exceptional, I just don't get it.
And Lee, may I say, I know this is a broken record, but I think in a game like this, Lee, I think it makes sense. Throw 5 balls downfield. I don't care who's covering who. I want 5 deep balls and maybe 1 or 2 even a Godwin. They don't all have to be to Evans and Trey Palmer. Lee, you watch these games every week. You throw that long ball, even if it's not a great pass, the guy comes back for it. The other guy's got his back turned. That's a flag waiting to happen. You pick up 40 yards at a clip, Lee, and you can stay in this ball game.
Well, somebody's been behind the 8-ball, unlike you, Ira. Someone's been behind the 8-ball. This morning I read this, and a columnist said, the NFL is turning into such a flag-happy league that part of your strategy is throw 5 or 6 balls downfield, and you're very likely going to get 1 flag.
I'm totally behind that. You'll catch one, and you'll get 1 or 2 flags.
Yeah, it's getting out of control. You need to call your buddy McKay and scold him about this.
You know, Steve, and the other flip side of that is, you know, the Niners are the number one scoring defense in the league. They're number one. A shade under 16 points a game that they're giving up. And that's the biggest defensive category is scoring defense. They're number one for a reason. And even though during the 3-game losing streak, Steve, I didn't think their defense was playing that well. And Nick Bosa, you know, by his standards, he was the defensive player of the year last season. I think he's got 3 or 4 sacks. That's not a big number for Nick Bosa. I hope that doesn't change much on Sunday. But, Steve, my point is, you know, we're talking about throwing some long balls. Steve, is this a defense and a Buck offense that they can sustain a 14-play, 75-yard drive or too many of them? Probably not, Steve. It would help to get some short fields, of course. But, Steve, if ever there was a game where you throw some balls downfield and take your chances, I think this is it.
Sage, when you talk about taking chances, it makes me think of Florida's Elite Restoration, because I don't want to take any chances. When I've got a disaster in my home, fire, flood, mold, storm damage, whatever it is, I want to call the best, and I want them ready for me immediately, and that's Florida's Elite Restoration. Just Google them. Look at their five-star Google reviews, 5.0 reviews, hundreds of reviews. They are fantastic. Best of the best, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Get there so you know exactly who to call in your time of need. And when you do call, mention that you heard about them on the Ira Kaufman podcast or Joe Bucks Fan. And if you need their services after the free evaluation, you'll get $500 back. Maybe that's money for your deductible, or it's just cash back on what you pay for them to restore at your property. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Are you okay with them, Ira?
I'm totally behind that.
Well, Sage, I'm just going to put a number on it here. I expect the Buccaneers defense to play like they mean it, play like men on Sunday, and I think that they can hold the 49ers to 24 points. And you know what? I expect in week 11 that the offense plays its best game, and they probably can max out against the 49ers at 20 points. So I'm going 49ers 24, Buccaneers 20. If the Bucs get blown out, they're healthy. They know this team. It's Todd Bowles' second time against Brock Purdy. Not a lot of teams can say that. I don't expect a mauling, and if they do, it says a lot about what they are.
Lee, I'll let you go third. I'll step in here, and I'll say, Steve, I like your number for the Niners, 24. I'm going to stick with that, too. I don't think the Bucs can score 20, Lee. I think they'll have 13. Lee, isn't that just about that 11 points? Isn't that just about what the spread is in this game, 10 or 11? I'm going 24-13. Home team.
Well, the one reason why the 49ers snapped out of their three-game losing streak and mopped up on Jacksonville was Trent Williams and Deebo Samuel are now healthy. Makes a huge difference. I'm trying to talk myself into the Bucs get within one score. I hear people say, "Well, the Bucs, you know, they were all banged up when they played San Francisco last year." Well, that doesn't mean San Francisco is a lesser team. Every time the Bucs play a physical team in the Todd Bowles era, save for the season opener last year, every time they play a physical team, they get beat up. San Francisco and Dallas in the playoffs. I know they didn't play San Francisco in the playoffs. This year, Philly did it to them. Detroit, Florida did. Until proven otherwise, they can't handle physical teams. And right now, it looks like the 49ers are peaking, right? They're right about the time you want to peak, in late November. I'm trying to talk myself into the Bucs are going to keep it within 10. I don't know, man. Not with this rotten run game. Not against that kind of defense. San Francisco 24, Bucks 10.
We all got the Niners taking scoring 24. Steve, may I add one more thing, Steven?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. of course, Sage. Of course, I do. Just want to throw out there that. Man, the Jaguars are probably one of the most overrated teams in the league. They've only beaten one team with a winning record. They're not that good. But so I have a little faith on that front.
All right. Now, Steve, I will respond in a different direction. And I really do believe this. The reason that the Tennessee game was so important, and of course I got it wrong, I picked the Titans and you guys got it right, is because if they would have been 3-6 going to San Francisco, and that's going to lead to a 3-7, that's trouble. That's like, I'm playing the young guys the rest of the way and maybe even Trask. Here's my point, Steve. Even if they go 4-6, which is likely, 4-6, I still think they can go 5-2 down the stretch, Steve. I don't think that's crazy. Go 5-2, you win 9 games, and you probably win the division, if you're into that. You know, if the division title's enough for you, we'll see what they do in the postseason. We know what happened last year, but I think they can go 5-2. I'm looking at that schedule. So even given a loss on Sunday, which seems very likely, I'm not throwing in the towel on this Buck team.
Interesting. I was out there Thursday, one Buck Palace. Casey Rogers, you know, super nice guy. And the hype for Marquise Watts was, I mean, you could slice it in the air with a knife. It was so thick. And Casey Rogers gets up there, the defensive line coach, and he floors it, man. He puts the pedal to the metal, the hype train. And he just went on and on and on what a talent this guy is. And I have to ask, now, Casey Rogers came out before anybody asked, and he admitted the answer. but it's not the full answer. But the way these guys are going on and on and on about Marquise Watts, and I know it's promising. I know he gave Bucks fans something to hope for. You know, two really good plays, only two, but 11 snaps. That's a pretty darn good ratio. If he was this stinking good as Casey Rogers claims he is, why in the world did you not find a way to get him on the field quicker than the ninth game of the season?
Bingo. Steve, let's put the brakes on. Very small. You talk about a small sample size. Who knows what kind of future this guy's got? But Lee makes a good point. You know, you look at him in practice every week. You see what, JTS is doing or not doing. You know, your pass rush is not up to Todd Bowles standards at this point. I think it's fair to say. And I think he'd be playing. So, Steve, I'm not saying the kid's not going to be a keeper. He won't be a player that they have to develop. He's got raw skills at this point. But, Steve, I've seen this before many, many times. Lee has two at one buck place. Man, you should see this kid. You should see. They were saying the same thing about Tryon Chienka. Right, Lee? The same thing about him. Wait till you see this kid. His athleticism off the edge. He's faster than running backs. And what do we get? We get mediocre play. So, Steve, I got to see more from this guy before I'm jumping on the hype train.
We're probably going to see a little bit, but you know they've hyped up Cam Gill before as well. So, you know, we'll see. I've never seen that kind of hype for a guy who didn't show up until week 9 when he hasn't been hurt. And you got Tristan Wirfs talking about, man, this guy's brutal on the scout team and all this stuff. Let's just see them score some points and then run the ball a little bit if that's what they're going to do, unless they're going to come out and try a unique game plan here, which would be fun to see. I think I'm with Lee. I'd love to see them try to air it out and do some different things. Maybe we see some trick plays in this game. You know, they go for broke, but I don't know. A Seattle, which Dave Canales is always, quoting his time there. They lost 3 times to the Niners last year and really didn't put up much of a fight. So that doesn't speak too well that Canales has the answers. All right, Ira, look, you got any plans for the weekend before kickoff at 4:30? Ali's in California. I'm hanging out. What are you doing?
I absolutely have plans. My wife and I are going to attempt the impossible tomorrow, Steve.
Hot tub?
We're going to move a big box, from the garage to the patio. We're going to try, if we can lift it. And we're going to try to set up this inflatable hot tub that our son sent us from Ohio on his own dime. He paid for it. He paid for the shipping. We're going to set it up. And I expect it to be about 104 degrees within a day or two. And, Steve, I'm going to soak my aching limbs, and it'll probably help my columns, Steve. It'll probably put a little juice into these columns.
I love when Ira talks about his son, and he says on his own dime. It makes it sound like he's 23 and he's scraped the pennies together. This is an established professional, Ira. He's a man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, who knows? He might be working for Florida's Elite Restoration a year from now. Who knows?
All right, Sage, enjoy your soak. And if not, we'll see you in the emergency room moving the box. Lee, get a good meal out there, and we'll be back next week.